Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Hello, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am truly honored to share the microphone with the most interesting people. Now, these are people who are business leaders. They have wonderful stories to share. Sometimes their stories are almost take up the whole episode. They're so fascinating. And they are here on this podcast to freely share their journeys, their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And in fact, my guests are so compelling and so insightful that this podcast was cited on Inc.com as one of the best business podcasts you need to be listening to and has been mentioned on Entrepreneur and MSNBC. Our topic today, performance pivots, and these can lead to limitless performance. And my guest is Scott Armstrong. Now, the whole limitless concept started with Scott playing with animals. Yeah, you heard me, playing with animals over 30 years ago. Sitting at a soulless desk as a corporate banker, he was deeply frustrated, and he knew that there had to be more for him than just pushing paper around. He had done it right. He'd followed the proper path of education and had what most considered a great path and, you know, a great future in front of him. Now, that was in 1986, and that's when things changed, and we'll probably go into that. And he decided to go what he terms limitless. So 3 years later, he was operating Canada's largest rehabilitation center for abandoned exotic animals. I just have a real problem with that. How did they even get here to be abandoned? A lifelong dream which came true for him. As a result, many wonderful creatures became part of his family. So he was swimming with jaguars, running with wolves, playing in the snow with tigers, and helping an owl take flight again. He wanted to help others feel the incredible satisfaction that comes from doing what one loves. So his next thing, his next journey was helping people create their own limitless adventure. And pay attention to that word. We're going to be using it over and over again. So over the last 20 years, he has worked with over 2,000 businesses and individuals to help them create and grow. Scott, good morning. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio.
That's one of the nicest introductions, Denise. Thanks so much.
I've read a lot of your story, and I was like, well, no kidding. I would rather do that than be a banker any day of the week. I mean, you don't even have to give that one any thought.
No, you don't, except, you know, in 86, the mortgage rates were, I think, prime was 11 and three quarters. And, you walk away from stuff when you leave mainstream. And, you're younger, you don't have the obligations as much. But I'm so glad I took the plunge.
Well, it sounds like you have led a fascinating life and one that you truly love, and then you have been able to translate that into helping other people kind of find, and this has been overplayed, overused, but find their passion, but you know what I mean. I mean, it is hard. If you're going to the same job day in, day out, you're coming home, you're complaining about the same thing to your poor spouse who's going, I heard this yesterday. Can we talk about groceries? I mean, come on. So, you know, there comes a point where you just go, I can't do this anymore. And your wife or husband says, oh, good, let's go do something else. It sounds like that's kind of what happened to you.
Yeah, when we, in the banking world, and I'm a really big advocate of not necessarily swimming in the mainstream, because, you know, when you take a look at polls of how happy, content, fulfilled people are at work, you'd wish the numbers were a lot higher, but, you know, it's well over 50% of us would just switch out something if we could actually find something that, the courage to do it, but something that would give us the financial, you know, consideration. And I was lucky enough, you know, I think I was in my early 20s when I did this, and I was in Toronto and at a bank, and I met all these cool people, you know, who are setting up huge businesses, and I get to visit on site, and I'd get to go back. This was, pre-computer nerd days where you had to do a lot of stuff by hand and dictaphone. I said, yeah, I think I'm going to go insane if I stay with something where I am not plugged into it. And that's really a big part of what we do is are you plugged in with what you do? And I left in Toronto and I went out, what everybody should do is I went out and bartended at Whistler, British Columbia, at a ski resort for a season. It's a great place to clear your head. And then I saved enough tip money to go to Waikiki and on the top of Diamond Head overlooking Waikiki. It was the pivotal point of my professional life at that point. I said, if I could do anything in the world, what would it be? I've been at Whistler, so I'm surrounded by people who are traveling and worldly. So I've got that influence going on. I'm at Waikiki and I've just been surfing. And I said, you know what? I've always had this affinity for the environment, still do. And I've always had the strong affinity for the natural environment, wildlife. And said, well, isn't that great? And I think it was a book by Barbara Sher, who was called Wishcraft. And it was back in the 80s, but it was a good guide to help one figure out what was going to do. So after the thought at Diamond Head, I went back to Toronto and said, yep, I'm going to work with wildlife. And, this is going to be my passion. And I went back to look for work in that area. And you know how many jobs there were, of course, absolutely zero. It wasn't a profession.
None.
So
right.
That was one of the first, that was one of the first pieces about, if you can't find that passion for yourself or that new sector for your business, sometimes you have to go about creating it. And so I volunteered at a wildlife sanctuary. I raised funds for them, got them a new home. And I said, you know what? I think I can do this. I can do it, better than they were doing it. And, as a result, 4 years later, I was working with Dr. David Suzuki here in Canada, Jane Goodall, who does the chimps in Gombe. So, we were the largest in our market sector, to put it in business terminologies, and we were operating without charitable influence. We were raising our own funds to do all the work with the animals.
And I'm so glad you brought that up because it was actually on the tip of my tongue to say, okay, how did you create that wedge to get into, what you're doing now. So you explained it without me having to even ask. But when you were doing this, I have to ask because, look, I'm a solopreneur, entrepreneur. And I don't work well with others. I'll be very honest with you. I cannot work in somebody else's office because I'm an introvert. I run with scissors. I don't play well with others. And if you want coffee, get it your own self. So I have to be on my own. Right. So, but it sounds like you created an opening wedge to just get in there, and I'm guessing from listening to you that you did it because you wanted to genuinely help them, but along the way you found out that you could actually create a big market share doing this. Is that a good
investment? Yeah, I say market. Yeah, sorry. And when I say market share, this was definitely, in modern day terms, it was a for-profit community-based effort so that, we didn't have a charitable status, but we needed funds. We needed $300,000-$400,000 a year to run because, tigers eat a lot of meat, cages cost money, insurance to go into a school, with a mountain lion and sit down in front of a bunch of kids and even hospitals. We did stroke therapy work where we take animals in and patients would touch them and they were getting responses that traditional therapies weren't. I mean, people's speech was actually coming back. So it was a really cool time, but you need funds for that. And so we found a couple different markets just north of Toronto. There's a great cottage country area like there is in a lot of different states and provinces. And we had 20 of them on weekly contracts and I visit schools. And so it was never... it was never commercial work, movie work or anything like that. When I say I was swimming with a jaguar, it would be at a cottage resort and we'd be fishing under a dock. So it was very natural behavior. And for those, animal lovers here, I always have to qualify. These animals came to us because they were purchased by people to have as exotic pets, changed their mind, or, people had, zoos had surplus animals. And there really isn't a big brothers club for zoo surplus animals. They tend to go to places that aren't too cool. So, that was our raison d'etre, if you will. And, but, over those 4 or 5 years, I hate public speaking too. I remember my first presentation, because that's how I was raising money. I was sitting at a senior's home and there was 20 seniors asleep. 20, I think, were deaf, and the other ones were blind. And I was still shaking like a leaf. So, and I think 4 days later in Toronto, they have what was then the Sky Dome, where the Toronto Blue Jays play. And I was speaking in front of 10,000 people. And so, that business journey that you go on, if you have passion, it drives you through barriers or obstacles that sometimes, I'm a bit of an introvert too, Denise. I know I am. But the passion in this case, helped me sort of override that. And so, that whole journey helped me really grow as a business person, to identify market niches and to really test my mettle against some psychological obstacles.
You said something really interesting, and congratulations, but when you're talking about speaking, public speaking, I know I've read somewhere that people are more afraid of public speaking than they are death, which I don't get. I don't understand that, but it's apparently, there's a study or multiple studies been done, and that's the biggest fear. It's like, really? They're just people. Picture them naked. You'll get over it. My trick has always been, all my life, because I had this one teacher. I hated school, by the way. Hated it. Doesn't mean I'm not highly educated. I am, but I still hated the whole process. I had this one teacher in grade school that was just the meanest woman on the face of the planet, and I still believe that. And she had these flappy arms. I mean, really flappy. She always wore an A-line sleeveless dress. And I would get fascinated by watching her arms flap around. Anytime. And I would completely miss the lesson because I was watching those wings just fly around. And I'd go off into Never Never Land. But what I have done over years is, if I get in a position where I'm really nervous, I just picture her. And all of a sudden, I'm too busy laughing or being entertained to be worried about what's going on. So there's my trick. Just find something that, distracts you a bit and just go do it.
Well, and that's the cool thing, because, as we speak here today, I'm actually on the board of directors for the Canadian Association of Public Professional Speakers. And if someone had told me 30 years ago that this was going to be my trajectory in my career, that I make a lot of my living doing public speaking, I would say, please, rewire me now, because I don't want to do that. And I remember meeting Richard Branson was up here launching his airline at YVR. And I did the entrepreneurial thing. I couldn't get one-on-one time with him, obviously, but I got him between his press conference and his hotel. There's about a 100-meter walk that he has to walk. So I bombed him. And, he was very amenable. And, I was very, upbeat and positive. Nobody brought out rifles to get me back or anything. But I asked him one question. I said, with business and specifically, small, medium-sized business, what's the number one thing that you would recommend? And he's dyslexic. He didn't even pass grade 9 math. He said, right, lack of sustained focus kills so many great ideas. You're on the verge of success. And, from a performance pivot, type of way, is staying in a game long enough. I mean, aren't we in a society where, it's instant gratification? I go into boardrooms and they say, well, we put in this initiative, 4 or 5 months ago, but it's not getting hold like we thought it would. Well, the marketplace doesn't switch on a dime like, thoughts can in a boardroom. And we just have to remember in our business vision, going for the long-term game and hang around to really test whatever it is that you're looking at.
I absolutely agree. Being in the industries that I am, I do a lot of social media marketing for clients, and it doesn't happen often, but every once in a while somebody will say, I'm just not seeing any ROI, return on investment. We've been doing this for 3 months. You haven't built an audience yet. We're working on it.
Yeah.
Hang in there. Just be patient. I mean, I'm a little more tactful than that, but not a heck of a lot.
I know.
You know me so well already, but you have to.
I think we're kindred in many ways.
I suspect, but you really have to let people, as I said at the top of the show, get to know you, like you, and trust you. And you can't put on a false front. You can't get out there and say, this, that, and the other, and I'm going to do this, when there's nothing backing you up. You have to really get out there and show up, I guess, is the best way to put it. and you have to show up authentically in your own voice. And I think people in boardrooms and people who may be at a higher entrepreneurial level may not necessarily understand that, because social media has changed everything. Everything.
It has. I mean, in marketing terms, 10 years ago, if we were to talk about the number of touch points you had to have with a client, an average is, depend on sectors and B2B or B2C, business to consumer, it was 7 or 8 touch points. They had to see your brand in some sort of website advertising connection way. And now it's up to 15 and 16 times that, people have to, because there's so much noise out there that, you have to stick around and you have to figure out what the message is going to be that is going to say, hey, you know what? There's a whole bunch of white Cheerios in the bowl, but, there's a strawberry one over there. Let's go check that out. How do you get to be that strawberry one?
Squirrels, I'm telling you. People have squirrel brains anymore. I do. I catch myself underneath.
Me too.
Sit, breathe, focus. It's terrible. But it's true. Okay, so I wanted to ask you how to swimming with tigers, and I almost said sharks, but were you swimming with tigers or jaguars?
Yeah, both actually.
Both?
And for those who are listening, you're not talking to a serial adrenaline junkie. I love risk, but it's calculated risk. And with the jaguars, I mentioned we'd be finishing a show in front of a couple hundred people at a resort, and jaguars have webbed toes, and so they're fisher cats from Central and South America. And I was really honored 5 or 6 years ago. I was in Costa Rica, and I got to see one in the wild, which apparently hadn't been done in 4 years. So that was really cool. But underwater, they were going for the perch or the sunfish that were in the shade of the dock. So we'd be in about 5 or 6 feet of water. And, he and I, the jaguar and I were tethered together. So, he just couldn't go off and do his own thing. But their eyes become translucent, like a Halloween scare costume green. And they are really good swimmers underwater. So that was really cool. And, with a tiger, the tiger, Micah, if you ever go to our website, you can see a picture of her there. She was about, 200 pounds, so not fully grown. But they're like, how a dog, when it swims and it comes up to you, it wants to put its paws on you?
Right.
Tigers like to do this kind of thing. So fortunately, I'm a scuba diver, so I could go underwater and she would have to go look elsewhere, because otherwise she'd just sort of thrust you underwater and hold you there kind of thing. But amazing moments for sure. I'm not sure, again, for the audience, this was 25 years ago. I'm 56 now. I'd like to think that I have all my digits in hand, and I was at that time in the 90s called Steve Irwin of Canada. I am, I have all my fingers. I recognize that I had never met any really old wildlife trainers, just because it is a precarious profession for sure.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, but it seemed rude. I'm cut you off.
It's okay.
But that did
we didn't talk about anything.
Oh, good. But that did launch a 25-year speaking career, which is phenomenal. And like you say, you'd never know where you're going to pivot. So, it looks to me like your pivot was pretty big. It didn't happen overnight. You took your time with it. You had to kind of find your way with it. There was no blueprint, obviously. You had to create a career. You had to, do a lot of what entrepreneurs and solopreneurs do. So my next question is, how terrified were you, or were you? Because, and I'm going to, kind of make a little bit of a observation here, but I have found through talking with many, many other solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, that we kind of have cast iron stomachs. We're not afraid of much, which may be stupid. So go. Tell me what was going through your head sometimes.
If the answer is yes or no, I'd say both. It has to be both. I'm not sure if you've ever had the entrepreneurial sweats. You dream and you wake up in the morning and your conscious brain, the judgmental part of your brain, hasn't kicked in, and your subconscious part of your brain just tells you, oh my gosh, what am I doing? My first month of revenue for the sanctuary was $530. My mortgage was $1,371. And I had to bartend at night for $1.95 draft and hope to get the nickel tip from a blue collar audience who would have preferred to have a female waitress. It's amazing. What am I? What have I got myself into? Absolutely, there was scary parts to it. I think depending on where, if you're listening to where you are in your journey, risk tolerance evolves and changes over life. Would I go back and do that again? You know, now I would. My kids are grown. I've got a bit of latitude. I can make some mistakes and, you know, not jeopardize their future. But, you know, in my 30s and 40s, I was probably a little less, risk tolerant because, responsibilities for my life, had changed. So, scared, absolutely. But what, a modest amount of fear or, tension or performance, requirements does is create some pretty neat energies and some solutions to go. I was speaking at some resorts. I had three or four the very first season, which was just enough to get by. And I'm going, I can't do that again. I'm going to go belly up. There's just not enough money coming in. So I went to the association for the resorts, and I presented there at their conference. And then I had 18 coming out. So, I had done the 400% increase. And I also put in a line of merchandise that, we'd sell $300 or $400 worth of shirts after every show four times a day. And so we, managed to really sweeten, that sector pot a little bit. I'm not sure I would have gone all that way if the perfect and the pressure hadn't been on to actually survive for a while. So fear, absolutely. And we're not even talking about the fear the time that a snake got out at a resort and disappeared. I had a python that disappeared for 4 or 5 hours. By the way, in the 7 years that I did that, never had any incidences with audiences. But anytime you're working with wildlife, is the as Siegfried and Roy will tell you, in Las Vegas, it's their wildlife. People aren't predictable, so why should animals be? You're always you're always full on. As I say, when I lost that snake, I got my first 22 gray hairs on my head, and they're still there.
I take it you found him.
Yeah, it was the van was supposed to be snake proof or animal proof, and the snake got out of his bag and then crawled down the steering column of a van and over underneath the deck didn't crawl under the deck. It went into the door panel on the van, and I had to get some metal snips and cut open the door to get the snake out. So
to your insurance company?
Well,
Just. Does your insurance care of that?
You just learned it. What's really was interesting is, as a solopreneur and working with wildlife too, there's a lot of people who really admire what you're doing, and you've come across this too. You're going, you're doing this on your own. You're being recognized by Inc. magazine as one of the podcasts to listen to. This is Denise's show. She's created this, and there's a lot of admiration for that. So I found that a lot of people, in this case, body shops, were quite willing to help me out because they were just in support of what we're doing. So market priced repair costs didn't often occur.
Oh, that's nice. And you're right, because when you're out and you're helping other people and you're not really expecting tit for tat or return or dollars in return, people do want to help. I have found this all of my working life, that entrepreneurs, solopreneurs actually, are the most generous people, because we want to succeed. We want to see other people succeed. It's just in our nature.
Mm-hmm. And it's our shop too. There's a sense that you're for me anyway. I mean, in the entrepreneurs I work with, we're in touch with what we do. When you send me an email prior to this webcast here, I'm not getting some automated form. It's from Denise, and this really matters that everything works well. I had to get my car windshield replaced yesterday, and unfortunately, I had to have it replaced earlier in the year too because of a stone chip. And I went to a solopreneur the first time, got great service, and the owner just really cared and was really grateful. And I couldn't get there this time, and I had to go to a larger auto shop, and where I was just an absolute number. And there was no kindness, there was a whole bunch of stuff that didn't go well. And I think from the solopreneur perspective, that idea of, going the extra distance and, contributing to community, you just tend to be tied to the people, your customers, that make your business tick. I'm not sure if you find that.
Oh, absolutely. Listen, last Thanksgiving, you're running around the week before Thanksgiving trying to get all of your stuff in a row because nobody wants to be shopping the day before, not anybody sane anyway. And I pulled up in front of my local grocery store and I was getting ready to make a left turn into the row, and my car just said, nope, not going there. Stopped, just stopped dead.
Yeah.
Oh, crud monkey. So, yeah, and I'm trying to figure out, what do I do now? You know, I've got AT&T roadside assist, so got them to haul me. I sat there for 4 hours. I'm telling you, people stopped, little old ladies stopped to help me. Honey, do you need my husband to come fix it? people. I live in the deep south. People are just very helpful. But finally, this tow truck driver, I drive a Range Rover. It can't be towed. It has to be flatbedded. So 4 hours later, he hauls me three doors down, seriously, three doors down to the Meineke. Now, this was a Saturday, so they couldn't come get me. They were swamped. I had groceries in the car. I mean, I was just like, now what do I do? And, you know, this is not an advertisement for Meineke, but it's in keeping with what you're saying, because they went out of their way to help me. They took me home with my groceries. They had to keep my car for a week. I needed a brake job. I had the brakes in my garage. They came out to my house, picked up the brakes, installed them. And then we found out, I was thinking, okay, this is, it's Range Rover. Nothing is cheap on those things. So I'm getting this eye-watering quote on what it's going to take to fix it. And one of their guys said, hang on a second. And he called me and said, Miss Denise, how much gas did you have? I said, about a quarter of a tank. I was actually on my way to, the gas station. He said, you're out of gas. I said, what? It turns out I haven't run out of gas since I was a teenager. I mean, I was so embarrassed. I was like, there's no way I'm out of gas. Turns out there was something wrong. There was some kind of kink in it. They fixed it, put some gas in it, drove it over here to pick me up so I could drive them back and pay my bill. This customer experience was stellar. And I will always, always, always take my car to Meineke now, that Meineke, always.
So, and they weren't thinking about getting a national name mention on your podcast today either, were they? And one of the performance tips. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm agreeing with you. They weren't. You know, I actually wrote a really nice review on their page. And they printed it and they posted it on all their bays in their little garage. And they took me out there and said, look, Miss Denise, we wrote, it's here where we can see it. I was like, really? I mean, they really care about their customers.
That's cool. Yeah. One of the performance pivots we have is the ROI, return on investment of kindness. And last week I had a bucket list item. I was in London to take in Wimbledon. And I was just feeling, it was just a great place for me to be. But I took in a lecture there by a guy who runs Headspace out of LA. And it's a mindfulness and mediation kind of meditation piece. And what he was talking about was there was an experiment on kindness, which is what I'm driving back to. And he said, people had a chance to do one random kind act a day, for 5 days, or to do five in one day and to find out what the effect was on, your personal happiness and performance. And, to say, there was a beta group that wasn't doing any extra kindness. And so those who actually did kind things, not only do you, radiate that to the world in terms of, wow, Meineke really did a wonderful thing for you, but what in turn comes back is your own performance, how you feel about yourself. Your obstacles that you have in your life seem a little bit smaller. There's stronger momentum when you're doing kindness and those kinds of things. And that kindness piece, when, you bring it up to a lot of seasoned, traditional, business, bottom line business people, they go, the kindness thing, they don't necessarily fully, from my perspective, see the perspective on kindness. It's just something that's fluffy. But, aren't a lot of companies looking to motivate culture? Aren't companies really trying to have lifelong customers as opposed to one-time transactional customers? And that Meineke piece that you've just said, and I promise not to mention their name again, but that's the kind of legendary stuff that that keeps on going. I know here in Canada we have an airline called WestJet, and there's a bride-to-be flying from Toronto to Edmonton, and the baggage handler's lost her wedding dress. And so there she is in Edmonton 2 days before her wedding and no dress. And just imagine the tension, that's going on. Well, the station manager at WestJet said, let's go shopping. And left her position, got coverage, took a cab into Edmonton, and, bought her a $1,500, wedding dress so that she could actually have that. Now, that happened 8 or 9 years ago, but that story still, in the airline circles resonates around. And WestJet could not, from a purely bottom line perspective, buy that kind of exposure. And in terms of that, but also the company, the employees at WestJet, they were part of something that was doing kindness types of things. So, when I talk to solopreneurs and business people, I say, so when was the last time you just, looked to be kind? You bought the groceries for the person behind you just because, you want to get 100 set of eyes on you right away. Offer to buy somebody groceries behind you, and everybody at the till, guaranteed, and the tills will look around because it never happens. You become that strawberry Cheerio in a bowl of normal Cheerios. People notice you, and I think that's it's a right thing to do, right? Being kind is the right thing to do. It's also not bad business.
I don't know why people find it so difficult. I wonder sometimes, are they just not aware that there are opportunities to just be a better version of you, in your daily business? I mean, they're just out there. I mean, I was in the grocery stores. I seem to spend a lot of time at grocery stores, I guess because I'm an introvert and I really don't go out unless I need something. But I remember being in when they start delivering, I'm telling you right now, when they can deliver 30 pounds of fresh crawfish and 2 cabbages to my door, I'm selling my car. I'm done. But maybe not. I do love my car. But I was in the grocery store, and there was this elderly lady. And, I mean, she was quite elderly. At a guess, I'm going to say she was in her late 80s, maybe early 90s. And she was ramrod straight. She was, beautifully dressed, and she had the cutest little jeweled sandals on. Her toes were manicured, pedicured. And she was just gorgeous. I mean, she really was. And I looked at her and I said, your shoes are so cute. That sparked a 30-minute conversation where she was telling me the history of the little town I live in. I wouldn't have missed that for the world. I wouldn't have missed it for the world. And I don't necessarily like talking to people. I don't know if you can tell or not. When I'm in a grocery store, I've got my list. I know what aisles I need to be in. I want to be out of there in 12 minutes. That's it. But just commenting on her shoes, she was a lovely woman. I never saw her again, but it was just a lovely conversation, and it was years ago, and I've never forgotten it.
No, and it's one of those things, if you can just make it a part of your DNA. I mean, you asked or said, why do more people do this? And I think we all know the white elephant that's in the room is that, for the large part, it's not difficult to be really busy in this life these days. And we're not getting any less busy. So it's really easy to become self-focused, self-absorbed. And, you may rationalize it's for survival that you've got to do this. But, we're so few of us, if you watch people going around, they're very rarely in that current moment like you and I are now talking. They're way ahead to think about, if I, okay, I'm finished with Denise at 9 o'clock my time this morning. I think it's a couple hours later for you. What am I going on? And I think we miss an awful lot of opportunities that present ourselves to extend kindness. I brought out a speaker. I'm a speaker, but I brought out this guy, an entrepreneur from Toronto. He runs G Adventure Tours, and they're a boutique adventure travel company. I don't think you'll ever be on one of his tours, though. Although, Denise, if I work on you enough, maybe he'll get you. He goes to Thailand, Antarctica, and all those kinds of things. But
I would actually love that. I've got a bucket list.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, he does a lot of great business, and he started out, when he was 18 or 20, and nobody took him seriously, and he's done really well for himself. But after the speech, he needed a ride back to the airport, and I said, listen, I'd be happy to give you a ride. That's the thing to do. That's what you do. And then we get stuck in traffic, and I'd recently written a book on entrepreneurship called Start Me Up. And there was a vignette in the book of him on his journey. He's the only guy I know who's been a multimillionaire who got fired from McDonald's, which was a neat sort of segue. Oh. But I had a copy of the book in between the seats of the car, and we're stuck in traffic, waiting and talking. And he says, can I look at the book? And I said, yeah, you're in it on page 47. And he read it a little bit, and he said, listen, can I have this? And I'm going, Absolutely, no problem. He said, I sit beside somebody at the Toronto Raptors NBA basketball game, and I'd like to give her this book. And I said, that's great. Who, And he said, yeah, her name's Heather Reisman. And in Canada, Heather Reisman is the president of Chapters Indigo, the biggest book chain across our country here. And within 4 weeks, I was in every Chapters Indigo across Canada. I did not offer Bruce a ride
Wow.
with that in mind. But
No.
there's just all kinds of things when you extend a little bit of kindness to people, people almost want to pay you back in multiples because it's so unexpected. So back to your, talking to the Meineke folks and the lady in the grocery store, I think, I can't talk to the value system of everybody speaking here, but I would certainly encourage that, that kindness and authentic kindness, not kindness for the sake of, I'm going to get this out of it. If you just do it, it's just smart business and it makes you feel better for yourself. So it seems to be a win-win.
It really is. And, honestly, I'm always surprised. I don't know what it is when I'm out and about, people always want to talk to me. And the only thing I can come up with is that I must look much friendlier than I really am. It's the oddest phenomenon. But I'm never able to get out of a store or a parking lot without somebody saying, hey. And I've put it down to it's a southern thing, but I don't think so. People always seem to
Your
want to have a
voice,
chat with me. It's the weirdest thing.
yeah, you've got the voice though. That as soon as someone hears you speak, it's soft, it's soothing, it's welcoming, and I think that might play a part in it.
That's interesting because
I imagine you've heard
I don't know
that
if I talk when I'm out in public much, but
a
I have to.
lot.
It's just been an interesting phenomenon because I remember being at the Grand Ole Opry with my sister. Now my entire family lives in California. You talk about busy and harried and always on the go, always on the go, driving all the time. And I was at the Grand Ole Opry with my sister. We couldn't get seats together, so I was in front of her, one down, and she was sitting behind me, and people around me were just chatting. They would turn around to talk to me. And my sister tapped me on the shoulder. She said, do you know these people? And I said, no, I've never met them. Well, why are they talking to you? I said, I don't know. So it just happens.
They say that two-thirds
Okay,
of all
so.
communication, something like that, is nonverbal. So,
I
there's
guess.
got to be something consistent there.
There
But,
must
you're
be.
talking
I'm going
about
to have to figure it out.
that. You're talking about,
Okay, so
that Harry that. Go ahead, yeah.
no, I'm sorry. Yeah, they're always harried. They're always in a hurry. I'm like, slow down, breathe, calm yourself.
Yeah.
As we say in the South, calm yourself.
Yeah, we have a
But
big
anyway.
one, and one of the for the solopreneurs is, beware the false emergency, and we get so reactive to
That's
things that
exactly
come.
what I
Yeah.
was going to ask you about. That's the weirdest thing. That's exactly where I was going. So, what is a false emergency? Kindness. It's the false emergency kindness. What is that?
The fault, the premise is that, we get, depending on where you are, 15, 17,000 push marketing messages assaulting your senses every day. So what you have is you're processing, your brain processing on overload, and it has to find ways to cope with all that information. And when it can't make an immediate decision on something, it goes into emergency mode. And because of that, things like, a broken photocopier, or we've seen, very minute things escalate very quickly. And that generally is because the person's psychology is saying, I need resolution to this because I've got another, 5,000 pieces of information are coming, and I can't have you, staying on my table any longer than is absolutely necessary. So, if any of your readers, go back to that, gosh, classic Stephen Covey time management kind of piece where, we are dealing with a lot of urgent and unimportant stuff right now. And I think, that was sort of his Q3 kind of thing. And, the false emergency is really having a mindfulness moment in the present so that when somebody comes up to you and says, you know what, Denise, Scott's going to be 3 or 4 minutes late for the national broadcast, kind of thing. And you go, okay, I really prefer this not to happen right now, but what can I do about it? And we don't go from 0 to 5 alarm, fire instantaneously. That we sort of go, okay, if this does pan out, what's the worst case scenario? And we tend to not make as many really great decisions if we make too many of them quickly. So, the false emergency is usually somebody else, can be somebody else bringing information to you that they have a heightened sense of urgency about, and they try to transfer that over to you. Or it could be because you're really busy and all of a sudden, that coffee that you wanted, just didn't show up on time, or it was two sugars. It's your brain's often closer to a tipping point of exaggerated emotional response than we'd want it to be.
I always tell people when that happens, breathe. Seriously. And I do this all the time. I mean, during my day never goes smoothly. It just doesn't. I know it's not going to. I can sit down. I can plan. I can focus. I can, meditate. Well, I try to meditate. I really don't. I fall over and drool, but I try. But, what I have learned, I do. It's horrible. My squirrel brain just goes, nope. It just goes to sleep.
Yeah.
But you know what I do? I have found I can meditate if I go open my refrigerator doors. I stick my head in, and it's about a two-minute meditation, because open refrigerator door syndrome means your mind just goes completely blank. So that's the only way I can just go, let me go see. Oh, but, I'll tell people, listen, go outside, take off your shoes, stand in the grass, stand in the dirt, do whatever you have to do. Ground yourself to the earth, breathe a little bit, and then go back and tackle it if you can. But if nothing else, just go, I'm not going to react to this. Give me a moment. Just take that time to let me assess this.
Yes, and for a lot of entrepreneurs that I work with, business people, it's how we start out our day. So if you get up in the morning and the first thing you do is reaching for your cell phone, really that somebody else's, push notifications to you. And now here you are waking up with this freshly relaxed brain, hopefully, and it's scrubbed. Do you really want to fill it with the latest headlines, or other pieces? This is the time to really do that great thinking. So what we often work with our clients is, take that first, 15 minutes if you can, half hour if you can, and really chart out the day of things that at the end of it, if you got this done, you'd feel awesome. Because we know that the tide's going to come in of all kinds of attention grabbers for you. So we suggest you just, or I suggest you defer, allowing that tide to come in for a while. And if it's meditation, that's great. Grabbing a coffee, sitting in a chair, and not just doing a to-do list for today, because, if you're doing performance, you've got a lot of that going. But taking a look at some of your longer goals, you wanted to revise your website, you wanted a marketing campaign, you wanted to connect, you wanted to get lower cost suppliers, whatever is important to you longer term in your business, that's what should be the first part of your day, because that helps you tie into that long-term part of the vision of why you're doing what you're doing. And if you're constantly dealing with the minutiae of day-to-day stuff on survival mode, that old axiom, you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, but if you teach them to fish, and the teaching to fish is that, hour in the morning where you can really check in to go, okay, here's what happened yesterday, here's where I want to go, and, what can, you actually do it. So, for me, when I do this, I get up in the morning and I don't take a look at my emails. I take a look at the events that are coming up here. I take a look at the content or speaking gigs that I have coming up, because really, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I touch with my raison d'etre, my passion to do that. And that makes all of the busyness that comes for the rest of the day much more palpable. And I don't think I'm alone in that, but I know you're a rather expert in this area as well.
You're right. I mean, and I ask a lot of people, if we have time at the end of the show, what is your morning routine? Basically, what I'm asking is, what is your success ritual that sets you up for the rest of the day? And I have found, by and large, that people do what you do. They don't allow other people to grab their attention before they've even kicked the sheets off. My iPads, I have two of them, my iPhone, they reside in another room. They're not allowed in my bedroom. Mm-hmm. That's just all there is to it. When I wake up, I want to think. I want to, express my gratitude to the universe, whoever's listening to me, could be anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really setting myself up for I'm trying to set myself up for a peaceful day. It never works, but at least my anxiety isn't off the charts before I get off the bed.
Yes.
So, And you know, I'll grab my tea and I'll go outside with my dog, and I've got these wonderful pecan trees. It's not pecan, by the way. For you, that's pea is in a can. Peas are in a can is pecan, just so you know. But I'll go outside and I've got this gorgeous, gorgeous backyard. Just that's my big tip. Pecans. But and I'll go out there and I'll just, again, you know, I don't meditate, but I just sit out there and I breathe, even if it's very humid. And I, you know, just kind of listen to the birds, and I stand in the grass under the pecan trees. When I come back in, I'm already kind of mild and not ready to bite somebody's head off for whatever imagined infraction, you know, that my team committed. So, and then, you know, I can come in here to my desk and go, all right, let's kick this into high gear, because I'm already calm. I'm already grateful. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, it absolutely does. And, you know, just being over in Wimbledon or England there for a week, I was sort of unplugged. And I know this every time. And I, you know, I'd ask, you know, anyone who's listening, has this happened to you where, you know, you have no idea what's happened at home, you know, in terms of news. And you know, you really haven't missed anything. So, you know, we really point to people to say, listen, you know, be selective about what you let into your mind space. So, you know, if you haven't missed 2 weeks of news or 3 weeks of news, if you've been away, you know, how important is that you plug back into it? Because most of it's nothing that you can do about it. It's for information purposes. And so, you know, as simple as going onto your email list and your notifications, like turn off all notifications on the phone, except the absolute ones that you have to have. Unsubscribe from all the things that you at one point were really interested in, but, you know, you really haven't looked at anything for, you know, for quite some time, and take back control about where you're going to actually focus your time, because the world will give you a million things to focus on. Just probably not going to serve you the best over the long term.
No. And I learned quite a long time ago to just not worry about things that I can't immediately be active or proactive in solving. I mean, if it's somebody else's monkey, somebody else's zoo, I don't care. I walk off.
Yeah. Yeah, we can't assume
takes
the whole world.
A little bit of mental toughness. Yeah, but you have to do it.
Well, and there becomes the challenge, because there may be an opportunity for kindness there. And, you know, that's it's one of those balancing acts that there are, you know, we've heard of people who are, you know, the givers, they're the servers, you know, they're selfless. And as a result, they never serve themselves and end up unhappy because they get drained because they've always been serving others. And at the other end of the spectrum, there's those who, you know, who are always focused on themselves. And I think our challenge is particularly as solopreneurs, because our marketplace is much more in touch with us than if we were sitting in a big corner office, you know, on Wall Street, is to keep that balance of self-focus and kindness, you know, in a place that we're comfortable with.
Exactly. So one of the things, you had given me a list of things that we kind of wanted to chat about, and I thank you for that. I think we got off course, but I'm going to try to get back on course a bit. But one of the things that you said was protect your most valuable asset. What is that asset?
That's your physical well-being. You know, no big drum roll here is that you are the engine. You know, if you don't get a good sleep, if you don't have good energy, you know, when you get up in the morning, that affects your bottom line. It affects your business performance more than any, you know, outside business environmental factor, interest rates, government policies, all those kinds of things. So what, you know, we do find is that entrepreneurs, because we tend to love what we do, we become that identity, and a lot of entrepreneurs and business people in general just don't make time for that 7 hours sleep, you know, that, you know, getting off the animal protein diet and having energy going. I've been off, I think, most animal protein now for about a year, and I feel like I've just got, you know, an abundance of energy. It's almost, I almost want to eat some animal protein just to calm myself down, because the
Test
energy
it.
Levels are so good.
You know, I do what is called intermittent fasting. I've done it all my life. I guess it's a new thing now, but I've always found that I do best on one meal a day, just one. I don't like breakfast. I never have. I tend to get hungry, you know, between noon and 2 o'clock, and I'll eat, I guess, what I would call a farmer's meal. You know, it's my meal of the day. And that's it. You know, I may snack on maybe a handful of nuts or something, because I love nuts of any description. But I don't eat again after 7 o'clock. And I find that if I eat more than one meal a day, I need a nap. It just, my body doesn't take it.
Yeah.
So no, I guess you have to figure out where you should be. You know, what is your diet? What are your true dietary needs? And figure it out quickly or you're going to feel like garbage.
Absolutely. So, there, you know, there's all the things you should do, but I think you said the most important thing is that each one of us is wired a little differently in terms of our system requirements. And we, you know, like a car engine, you know, we get tuned up a little bit differently on that. What does seem to be common is that, you know, if what you're doing now is going to continue to affect you, you know, a decade out or, you know, 20 years out. So if you're 40 years of age now or in that range, you know, you are affecting your health of your 60s and 70s by the habits that you're doing right now. Not only your business, you know, that you're currently doing today, but, you know, if you're planning on being in business in your 50s and 60s, when your body decides, hey, you know what, you've been around for four decades, we're going to turn off a few of these hormones, we're going to turn off a few more, and by the way, that great skin tone you've enjoyed all your life, we're just going to shoot the elasticity out of it and go back to your teacher who was swinging her arms in her class, your class as a student. Yeah,
you know what I'm going to be dreaming tonight? You know she's going to show up. I promise you she will.
I think she might be in a lot of dreams tonight that she wasn't expecting. But I think that's, you know, it's a long-term investment tool. So if you buy a piece of equipment, you know, and you put it into your business and, you know, computers or technology, you know, you take care of it. You put maintenance on it. And we are the biological beings that we rationalize all the time why I can't get half an hour, you know, of exercise every day. And quite honestly, my best thinking time is when I'm out getting the blood pumping. And that could just be a walk and it could be a full-blown workout. I see things and opportunities that I would never catch sitting at a desk. So when I have a strategy meeting, when we have our, you know, strategy meetings, often if it's with a small company, we will grab three lift tickets. We will go to the top of Whistler Mountain on a sunny day. We will have a laptop in the backpack and we will get to, you know, one of the peaks there, look out. We'll have done a great run and we'll just sit and talk about, okay, what is 2019 and 20 going to look like? And you want to talk about getting some great, you know, inspired thought out of it. It's literally blue sky thinking at that point. It's a good day. But that is so much more robust than, you know, just going through the grind and then hitting that wall, you know, where you are exhausted. And then all of a sudden, you know, you've got the client of your dreams who's asking for stuff for you. And you're delivering, you know, what you would consider for yourself subpar, you know, responses. And you miss that. So, you know, that keeping yourself optimized piece, the sleep is the first and foremost kind of thing. They did studies, too, even with U.S. Navy SEALs, that even after they do their 36-hour missions, that, you know, guess who's human? You know, guess who crashes for 3 or 4 days before they actually, you know, get back to normal cycles and things like that. So your success formula in the morning, you know, that you were talking about is preceded by, you know, I'm in bed at 10:30 every night. Obviously, I have a wonderful nightlife, but, you know, I wake up at 6 in the morning, and that's an hour and a half before a lot of folks are moving around here, and I get a lot of my heavy lifting done in that time. And a lot of the entrepreneurs that I know, there's a great company here called the Great Little Canadian Box Company. It's one of the 10 best managed companies in Canada, and the owner, and he's in there every morning at 5:30. Because before 7 o'clock starts, when the first shift comes in, he can get all that kind of stuff done. And he's out by 2 or 3. But that hour and a half in the morning, it's worth about 4 or 5 hours later in the day in terms of the quality of output he gets out of himself.
Oh, definitely. I'm very much a morning person, but I have to admit that sleep is not something I've mastered. I do not sleep well. I never have. My mother, it's not on my list of skills, to be honest with you. If I get 3 or 4 hours a night, I'm lucky. And most times that's not even in a row, but it works. I mean, it's always worked for me. I'm hoping that maybe as I get a little bit older, I'll start to sleep more. But then, you know, the conventional wisdom is as you get older, you sleep less. So, oh, goody. Okay, we'll see what's going to happen. I do try. Well, I do try to make myself go to sleep. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, and there's a lot of factors, and I don't pretend to be the sleep expert. And if it's working for you and you're not getting any physiological long-term,
yeah,
you know,
no.
Part.
No, I mean, every then, once in a while I'll run a sleep deficit and I'll crash, but, you know, maybe twice a year I'll just go, okay, I'm going to lay down now. Just that's the end of it. But for the most part, this is just the way it's been. Do
Do you
I?
find you sleep better after, if you've had some exercise?
Yes, actually, I try to walk my dog every night. She's
Yeah.
got this giant backyard. She doesn't need to be walked. She can run around and play out there. But like you, when I'm out there and I'm walking her, and I do it at night, 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. I live in a very small, quiet neighborhood. There's no danger. But there's also no other dogs for her to stop and visit with, meaning I have to talk to their humans, so this is a good time for us. But I find that I kind of fall into a meditative state. I let her run, do what she wants to do, and that's
Yeah.
when my thinking brain kind of engages, and I'm like, ooh, ooh, good idea. Ooh, let's get this written down. Ooh, ooh. And then,
Yes.
I get it written down, and that's it. I'm no more work for the night. I won't do that, but yeah, and I do rest better because, I've exercised, I've taken a, shower hot enough to steam broccoli. Now I'm ready to try to sleep. The operative word being try to sleep.
Yes. Well, there's a book by Daniel Pink, and it's all about time cycles in the day. And just for solopreneurs, they did some studies with parole hearings, and apparently people get more parole if they have a hearing in the morning than they do the afternoon. And likewise with surgical errors in hospitals across the United States, they're up about 20 to 25% in the afternoon if you're having surgery. So have morning surgery if you have to have surgery,
Oh.
because people have fatigue going on in the afternoon. There's that lunch after lunch letdown, and so for solopreneurs, I'm always encouraging that if you are strong in the morning and you have an important meeting or conference, try to have it in the morning when you are at your best, and the people across from you will be at their best. It seems to be a rather significant thing that previously was, just thought it was random, but they've quantified about a 20% performance difference between morning and afternoon.
And see, Scott, that makes perfect sense to me because I have found out that I genuinely am one of those annoying, perky morning people. I don't drink coffee. I just hit the floor running. The devil says, "Oh crap, she's awake." I've always done that. But I have also found that in the afternoon, especially after my farmer's lunch or whatever it is, and it's not a huge lunch, but I'm breaking a fast, so it does has something to do with the way my body reacts. So then,
Yes.
about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I find that I'm just like, I don't want to do this, and I get whiny. It's very unattractive. Good thing nobody is here to see it because I start going, me, 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 me. I don't want to do this. But about 7 o'clock at night, I'm like, ooh, back into my office, and I'm off and running again. It's the craziest thing. It's almost like a 12-hour cycle, 10, 12-hour cycle.
Yes. And I would say, if people have that kind of cycle, I'm the same way. You and I should talk between 3 and 4, because, 2 plus 2 equals 3 for me between, 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm nowhere near at my best. And so as entrepreneurs, we try to work that full day. We should be, but that full day doesn't have to be, 8, 10 hours in a row. Work to your cycles. I do great work in the morning. I'm like you. I was sitting at the airport last night picking up my wife from the airport, and I had to wait an hour, and the sun was setting, the mountains were there. I brought out my computer, and I laid out a whole, piece of curriculum that I have to work for a conference coming out, and it was so easy. Now, if I try to do that 3 in the afternoon, so yes, be selective when you need to do your heavy mental lifting.
Exactly. Okay, you also talk about, oh, we've only got 2 minutes. I told you it was a quick 60 minutes on the
You are
internet.
good.
Oh, thank you. And it's such a pleasure talking with you. But you talk a lot about the power of your posse. Do you have time to share that?
Yeah, that's simply, the 5 people that you hang with the most you tend to be the average of those. And as your business grows, and life goes on, it's important to make sure that you're around the 5 people that, make you feel the best, who believe in you, who can open doors for you, and you can help them. And if you're around people who are always negative and talking, that affects your personal mindset. If you're found people who are always struggling to make existence, they're always talking broke talk, they can't afford this, then that affects you. So it's more important than most people believe that to take a look, after you've listened to this podcast, 5 people you hang around with the most, are they the ones who are going to take you to the vision that you have for yourself? And if yes, awesome, you've done great stuff. You may have to cultivate and change up a little bit as you go. Just being mindful of the time. I just
Absolutely.
want to keep everything.
Oh no, I mean we will stop broadcasting live, but we'll still be recording. So anybody in the chat
Okay.
room will still be here. Okay, so Scott, where can people find you on the web?
Yeah, they can find me at Scott Armstrong Limitless. That's Scott with two T's, scottarmstronglimitless.com. And, I reach out for folks in terms of speaking at events to motivate people and with performance. And happy to, have clients in Europe and through North America for these kinds of things. And happy to connect to talk, even if it's just to answer a quick question or two. It's that giving forward is the that we talked about earlier.
I love that. Scott, thank you so much for being my guest. It's been a genuine pleasure speaking with you. I feel like we're old friends. It's the oddest thing. And I thank you
Me
for all
too.
of the wonderful tips, thank you, and advice that you've shared with our audience. And I encourage the audience to go visit you, on your social media platforms and, of course, your website. And before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Scott, thank you.
Thank you, Denise. Have a great day.
Thank you. I will. You too.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.